This is going to be more like a Sunday morning because I'm going to, I'll start with the verse, we'll pray, and then we'll just kind of go. 1 Chronicles 29:14 says, "But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? Everything comes from you, and we have given you only what comes from your hand." This is the idea of stewardship and giving back to God. So let's pray and we'll start. Father, tonight I ask that you would have us be a people who understand more and more deeply every day that everything that we have is a gift from you. That what we think of as ours isn't really ours, it is yours. And that we in turn would be a people who most rightly reflect the gracious gifts you have given us. Amen. Okay, so open to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. And I'll read verse 7 in just a minute. Really, the first question as we start is, what is a steward? Because we're talking about stewardship this week and next week. This week is in regard to giving and money and what we have. This is probably the least popular subject in the history of the Christian church. So you're welcome. This used to be the fifth one of the gospel class, and now it's the seventh. I don't know why we're just moving it towards the end. It's kind of interesting. So anyway, a steward is a person who by God's grace belongs to God. And because they belong to God, they recognize that ultimately everything they are and have belongs to God. Everything we have has been given to us as a gift. Therefore, we seek to both enjoy the gifts God has given as well and invest those gifts in others and the future by distributing them wisely. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7, just very quickly, says, "For who sees anything different in you? What do you have that you did not receive? And then if you received it, why do you boast as though you did not receive it?" This is the idea that everything we have, whatever gifts and talents and all that, all comes down as a gift from God. So the question starts then, who owns everything? Everything ultimately belongs to God. Perfect. There you go. You lose everything else that you ever learned at Element. You remember that everything is God's, because we live in this mythical world where your house has your name on it. Your pink slip on your car has your name on it. The mail comes to your house with your name on it. And we have propensity to think because of these things that everything belongs to us. I mean, Exodus 19:5, great verse. God says the whole earth is mine. Period. That's not a general sense. That means everything specifically is his. My house, your house, my car, your car, my stuff, your stuff, my TV, your TV, it's all his. Open to the book of Job. Give you just one little verses broken over the place. Job 41. It's almost at the end of the book. Job 41, verse 11. Job 41, verse 11. Says this. This is God speaking to Job, by the way. He says, "Who has first given to me that I should repay him? Whatever is under the whole heaven is mine." That's God speaking. You know, Psalm 50, verse 10, for every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on a thousand hills. Many times we will come at this and we'll say, yes, but I'm hill 1001. Okay, this is a poetic way of saying that everything is God's. And so you may think, well, why have my car? It's my car. Well, no, it's whatever car you drive. It's God's Honda. It's God's BMW. It's God's Volvo. If you say, well, I don't have a car, I walk. Well, great. They're God's shoes and God's feet that you're walking in. We're just like cattle. Haggai 2:8, God says, "The silver is mine, the gold is mine, declares the Lord Almighty." So people say, well, it's my money in my pocket. Well, no, it's God's pocket. And it's God's money that's in that pocket. Everything else becomes just illusion. In the book of Deuteronomy 8:17 and 18, it says this, "You may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth." So the fact that we even have hands or a mind to do a job is a gift from God. All of our skill comes from a gift from him. And so we cannot look at God and say, this is mine, I earned this. And if we reorient our lives in this way and begin to understand this, the scriptures don't seem so bizarre when they talk about money and stewardship and all of that. Now, Eric Smith has been called the founder of America's economic system. And he said this one time. He said, "Money is a neutral medium of exchange. And I think that's a total line of hogwash because it's not true. Because if it was true, money wouldn't consume our minds and our time the way that it does. Money literally consumes us. We like things money can buy. Every other year, my wife and I usually get an income tax refund back. And every time we get one back, we switch every year who gets to get something. And now that we went through the Dave Ramsey course, we're like, so now we just save it and try and pay things off. Curses you, Dave Ramsey. But, you know, so, but a few years ago, my wife was going through school. And so we saved that and helped use pay for the school. A couple years before that, we bought her one of those front-loading washer and dryer things. You know, they're really, I don't use them, but, you know, they're cool. They're blue. And they're on pedestals, so they're neat. A few years before that, I bought a plasma screen TV. Before they had LCDs, right? But it was like the end thing. You know, I did all the research. I looked online. I, you know, saved the money from that. I figured out what's going to be the best price, searching what's going to measure, so what's going to fit exactly in the hole that I got for it to fit in. So it's just going to be just perfect. And I bought one. And I took care of it. And I loved it. And I petted it and called it George. It was wonderful. And then at the time, I had these two dogs, Zan and Shoes. And Zan thought that every time the TV was on, it was talking to her. And so she's like, and so first time that TV is on, she comes in the house, first thing, takes her nose, boom, right across it, trying to figure out what's going on the TV. And then I freak out because that's my new TV. What are you doing? Because at that moment, all of a sudden, I didn't own the TV. The TV owned me. And this is usually what happens with our stuff and our possessions. They begin to have power over us. Richard Foster writes this. He says, in point of fact, money has many aspects of deity. It gives us security, can induce guilt, it gives us freedom. Most sinister of all is its bid for omnipotence, because it wants to have control of us in our lives. Money is kind of a force. Possessions, again, want to have power over us. As a matter of fact, Jesus talks about money 3 times more than he talks about love, 7 times more than he talks about prayer, 8 times more than he talks about belief, because money fights for our hearts. And this is why we are to steward it wisely. As a matter of fact, 25% of all of Jesus' words in some sense can deal with money. 10% of all the scriptures can deal with money. And in churches, we hardly like to talk about it because everybody's like, they just want my money. At least we don't talk about it very much. And so maybe we're unbiblical. I don't know. We should talk about it more. But in truth, in the end, either you handle money or money's going to handle you. So open to Matthew chapter 6. Am I talking fast? I'm not trying to buzz through this just to get to my wife's stir fry or anything. She says, I'm going to make chicken stir fry. I'm like, I will be home. Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19. Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. In a sense, Jesus is saying there's two types of kingdoms, and these kingdoms are at war. And in a sense, all that we have of value here are possessions and the things, and your great deal and the purchase that you got, they're all going to come to an end. The new sweater you bought, if you wear sweaters, if you're, you know, like, anyway, they're decaying. Your car is rusting. Every time you drive it, you're losing more tread on your tires. If you bought a computer last week, it's out of date this week. Everything's just kind of going away. I tried E-Trade, got an account, played with penny stocks, lost it all. Okay, so it just all kind of goes away. So it keeps going and says, the eye is a lamp of the body, so if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And so what are you focusing on? Because what you focus on is kind of what you're going to end up becoming. My dad, my real dad, a few years ago bought a Harley. Now, he had been talking about Harley Davidsons forever. He wanted once, I mean, a mile down the road, he could see this Harley coming one day. He was going to buy it. So he finally buys a Harley. Now he has two. So he buys his Harley Davidson. And now all of a sudden he's bought the Harley. He's got the Harley t-shirts and the jackets and the bags. He joined the clubs. As a matter of fact, in 2 weeks, my dad is actually coming to visit. He'll never watch this, so it doesn't matter that I'm talking bad about him. But he's coming down to visit. He lives in Rockland, and he is hopping with his group, and they're driving down and doing a bunch of stops, and they're going to end up at the Harley Davidson place in town. He's not coming to visit me. Okay? He's like, if you want to come see me, I will be at the Harley dealership on this day at this time. Come on down. And I'm like, don't be like, oh, it's not terrible. It's okay. You know, he's a hippie, whatever. So he's like, come on down and see me. And I'm like, I might, I don't know. But that's his whole life has kind of become about Harley Davidson. It's kind of this thing that started to own him. And so Jesus goes on and says this: no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And that's the idea, that we can only serve Jesus or we will serve everything else. You know, again, you know, we don't usually in churches talk about money a whole lot because people think that we're just after their wallets. I mean, I could talk to you about anything in your life, and I do talk to people about just about everything in their life, their relationships with their spouses, raising their kids, taking leadership, helping the hopeless, loving the lost, pornography, lust, anger, anything. But as soon as I talk about money, people say, that's it, they just want our wallet, we're out of here. Happens all the time. And so again, you know, I can talk about anything, but if I was to say, so how much money is in your bank account? Be like, that is off limits. Because it is. I don't want you to ask me that question either, so that's off limits. You know, but why is that? Because almost all of us know that we handle our money poorly most of the time. And many times it becomes our God. You don't mess with someone's God. This is why Jesus said you can't serve both God and money. And what we end up serving in the end is really our God. You can only serve one God at a time. And so you want to know what your God is. Look at your calendar. Look at your checkbook or your online checkbook. Look where your money and all of your time goes. That's a very good indicator of your values and what you really want to serve. Now, some people, I know a guy, it's golf. He loves golf. Everything's about golf. He spends all of his free money on golf. It all goes there. Some people I know, it's about vehicles, buying and selling, fixing up, working on, all that kind of stuff. Some people, it's their 401k. Their 401k is a great thing, but it's their God. They save everything for the retirement. And many times we will come into things and say, well, you want to do this? Well, I don't have any money to do that. And it's not that we don't have any money to do that. It's that it's not important enough to us to do whatever somebody is asking us. And so I know some people who say they don't have any money and they can't give, like, even say $20 to God, but yet they can afford a new T-shirt or concert tickets or a Blu-ray or something like that, because it all comes down to what's important. As a matter of fact, in one of our staff meetings a couple weeks ago, we were just sitting around talking about this, and we're just saying, what do we say we have money for, and what's actually our priorities? And we just kind of talked about this. And we all have somebody that we all know in some sort of way. It's not the same person, so we all just know crazy people. And when there's this particular type of person that we all know where they say they don't have enough money to really feed their kids or their family, and yet their hair's always done, their nails are done, they're driving around in a new car. And so, again, it's all about what's important to you, where you actually spend your money. Because we have money for the things that we really want to spend money on. Oh, I don't have any money, but I'll go see a movie. Well, that's, again, like $30 you go see a movie these days. So we do have for things that we want. And so, you know, again, we serve things and love things in our world many times more than we actually love our God, because we give God the last and the least of everything that we have. And so how do you break this cycle? How do you begin not to be ruled by money, giving, and proper stewardship? That is how that cycle ends. And so even now, as we talk about this, a lot of people in their minds going, yeah, but in the back of it, money is always trying to give you reasons to not listen to anything I actually say. And I will tell you, as we go through the rest of tonight's lesson, I don't work on commission, okay? I don't. My name is Aaron. I'm your pastor. I'm your friend. I am not here just to get your money. That's not what this is for. But the way you begin to break this cycle of money having control on you is you actually learn how to give. Now, there are three ways of giving, and this all depends on money being controlled by you or money controlling you. And the first way people give, and I talked about this a few weeks ago, is what's called leftovers. Leftovers. In the book of Malachi, it has very hard words for people. The prophet is lamenting because people keep giving all of their best things to their governors and their rulers and important people. It's why today I always find it really odd that rock stars get free guitars and free amps and free strings, and sports stars get free baseball bats and gloves and uniforms, because they're the ones that could actually afford them. Right? And they get them all for free because everybody gives them to them. And all of us who can't really afford half the stuff have to go out and buy them. It's kind of crazy. And this is what happened. They're like, oh, you're the important people. Well, I'll give you this and this and this. And that's what continued to happen. And then they'd come and they'd say, oh, it's time for me to give to God. And they'd grab like their lame, one-eyed, three-legged goat. And they'd bring it to go, here, God, here's my goat. And they'd give God the goat, when God is always calling for the best and the first. And this is what they're giving God. They're giving God their leftovers. And eventually God in Malachi says, stop bringing in anything. Just shut the doors and don't want anybody else to come in. Because the problem with leftovers is there's usually not much left over in the end. I mean, after your seventh pair of maybe your brown shoes and your concert tickets and your cable, there's not much left over. And giving is not supposed to be, well, I'm going to commit to this list and give this and makes me really holy. But you will grow tremendously in your Christian life when you simply learn how to give. Now, can you have a relationship with God without giving? Yes, you can. But I will tell you, it will never be what it should be, because that money will always become your God in the end. The second way people give is what's called loyalty. Malachi 3, 8, and 9 says, will a man rob God, yet you rob me, but you ask, how do we rob you? In tithes and offerings, you are under a curse, the whole nation of you, because you are robbing me. Now, this is what comes down to the concept of the tithe. There are a couple of people in the scriptures who are exempt from giving, well, in the Old Testament, exempt from tithing. And those were, number one, those disloyal to God, and those who don't know God. There you go. We get one or the other. Other than that, you know, okay, we're just have to give. And I get in conversations sometimes with people, and a lot of times the first thing out of their mouth is, well, you know, the tithe isn't relevant today. And whether it is or not, I mean, we'll talk about that a little bit. Whether it is or not, my first question when somebody says that, and that's the first thing out of their mouth is, oh, so when did you stop giving? Because that's usually the reason why they say that, because they want to stop giving. Christians hate to part with their money, just like everybody else does. I get that. I hate parting with my money. This is nowhere seen better than after a Sunday morning service and a lot of people go out to lunch. A lot of places hate it when Christians come, because Christians show up and they eat and they're rude and they tip poorly. We should be the best tippers in the world. I'm not bragging, but I am so picky, I always tip well. Because I don't want anybody spitting in my food, and I want them to remember me when I come back. That guy tips well, be nice to him. He may be picky, but he tips well. I always want to be that guy, because I am so picky. And I really want to say, when people get all irritated, because I have friends, you know, in the service industry, and I really want to say, when the Christians tip terrible, I'm like, well, they don't give to God either, so don't feel bad, you know. Now, for me, when my wife and I started giving consistently and regularly, and what that meant, it was hard. It was very hard. When my wife and I bought our first house, I was told by the bank agent person, they said, well, you know, you don't have to buy this. You could afford this house. And I said, well, no, that's not really what I consider my wife and I making, you know, because right off the top, as soon as we get paid, you know, we take a certain chunk of that out and we set it aside and we give out of that. And so I'm like, this is what we make. This is what we need to qualify on, is this. Well, no, everything else says you make this. And I go, no, but we don't necessarily, quote unquote, make that. We have this to spend it, because it was the priority to us. The first thing we did out of anything that we got was we gave. And so people didn't understand that. And today a lot of people still don't get that at all. And so it's very hard to do at first. Element as a church, it's as we as a church itself, we take 10%, the first 10% that comes in of whatever comes in that people give, and we set that aside. Element actually tithes. We set this aside for church planting and world relief. And so it sits aside in an account, and we help out people. I think last year we ended up giving away almost $20,000 to different things last year. I think this year we're up at about 25 already this year of giving money out. And if you want to know what we support, ask me. We support and help a lot of things out there. Now, a lot of people say, well, you know, in the Old Testament, I heard the tithing was 10%. It's actually, in truth, closer to three times that. 10% people brought in and went to the priesthood and the pastors to pay them for their work in ministry. 10% also came into the treasury to pay for festivals, parties, worship events, community building events, gatherings. I mean, can you imagine, seriously, if all of us kicked in 10% of our income simply to throw parties? I mean, that would be some nice parties, because worship was always tied to celebration. And you can't do that with like Cheez-Its and juice boxes, right? It's got to be good. You know, and one of the knocks on Jesus was that he went to parties and not just went, he had a good time. He didn't stand there going, oh, how dare you. He had a good time. He wasn't in the corner with a lampshade on his head going, woo, you know, that. It wasn't like that, but he went to parties and he had a good time. And some people have a problem when the church spends money on parties. Some people have a problem when we spend money on parties. We will do baptisms on Labor Day, and we invite everybody to come. We do a Labor Day barbecue. And Element provides the tri-tip and the bread, the majority of the cost. And we pay for that, because we think it's important to do events like this where people get together and eat and have a good time. And so we spend a lot of money when we do these things. So you should come. It's great food. It's excellent. And then bring something good to share, because it's always important, too. I would say a lot of churches today probably don't party enough for God's taste. And we should do it, we should repent and then do it more. So anyway, 10% huge celebrations to honor God where everybody could come, rich and poor, every race, all walks of life. And then 3.3% on top of that went to the poor. This was 10% every 3 years. There's also gleanings in the field where farmers are supposed to leave the last of their cuttings so that people who didn't have any money, didn't have any food, could actually walk through these fields and actually pick stuff and then go and eat food themselves. So, but again, it wasn't just a check they were given out. It was something that they actually had to go and do and work. So it was like workfare, not welfare. They had to go and actually work and do these things. And then lastly, there were also special offerings on top of that that were given for the building of the wall, the tabernacle, various building projects, and such. So it ended up being like 27 to 30% in the end that people in Israel gave. Now today, giving is called to be generous, sacrificial, and joyful. That is how we are supposed to give. There's not necessarily a defined amount in that, but generous, sacrificial, and joyful. And I would say, as a baseline, 10% is always a good place to start. George Barna, statistician, says this. He says, while many Christian churches teach the biblical principle of tithing, giving 10% of one's income to the church, relatively few people follow the practice. So I'll give you some statistics which are very interesting. 17% of people who attend any type of church, not just Christian churches, but any type of church, claim that they tithe. When checked with household income, only 6% did. 32% of people who claim to be born-again Christians say they tithe. So 32%. When checked with household income, only 12% actually did. So not only are lots of Christians not tithing, but they're lying about it too. How great for us. We're just wonderful. Now, is it a lot? Do you have to tithe? No, you don't have to. In the Old Testament, you know what happened if you didn't tithe? Nothing at all. Okay, so nobody came and hauled you off to jail or cut your arms or your feet off, whatever. You know, nothing happened like that. So it's not a law in that sense. But are there consequences to not giving? Yes, of course there are. I think there's spiritual consequences. Because not only does it mean that we're robbing God, but we become very self-centered, and we are giving only to ourselves. 16% of born-again Christians, members of churches, so born-again Christian members of churches, gave no money to their church in the last year. Do you think it's possible to go to church for a whole year and not give anything and still be worshiping? No. Actually, biblically, that's not true worship. Well, I was raising my hands and I sang the songs and I had all these emotions. But in the end, your sacrifice is only to yourself. I mean, you have to understand, worship throughout the scriptures is part of that is sacrifice. It's sacrifice. And so it's all your time and money goes to yourselves. Well, you can sing, you know, half an hour, 52 weeks a year, but if you're not giving, it's not biblical worship. Biblical worship, part of that is actually giving. And so if people are not reading, loving, doing God's work and giving on the earth, then we're not worshiping all those things together. The average American loses $100 in change in a year that falls out of their pockets when you sit down or do whatever, so $100 a year. 23% of church members last year in the U.S. gave less than that to their churches. So we lose more change to our couch than we give to our God, which is very kind of very sad. The average single man in churches gives less than the average single mother to churches. It actually takes, on average, 5 to 10 guys to equal the giving of one single mother. It's also very sad. God does not bless his children so they will consume it all, but so they would distribute it. We need to be people with open hands. And so our perspective needs to change about what true worship means, especially in terms of ministry and giving. Number three way of giving is saying, God, is there anything that you would like? Just take it. And I think a lot of people are afraid to say that because we think God's going to take it all and leave us to go live in a box somewhere on the side of the road. And I don't think that's true. I think God is good. I think a view like that believes that God is not actually good, and he is very good. God says, you know what, give and trust me. If you came to my house and I said, here, I got $50,000. Now, I'm going to give this to you, but I want you to give $5,000 of it to this thing over here. Would you feel ripped off? No, you would think, my goodness, I just got $45,000. That's amazing. This is how we must see our income and what we have, because that's what it truly is. God is giving us our wealth this way. All we have is a gracious gift from him that he has given from us. And so the issue goes from, well, how much does God want to take from me, as goes to how much is God actually giving to me, and what do I get? Because again, it comes down to the issue of ownership. Everything belongs to God, it's all his, and we should bless him with what is actually his. It's like this. Imagine if you have a child, and this child makes you a card. They go into your desk and use your paper and your envelope and your pen and all of your stuff, and they make you a little card. Here, Dad, Mom, I made you a card. You go, oh, you didn't make me a card. This is my card. I owned all this stuff. No. And you go, oh, thank you so much for making me a card. That's what the idea is. It's all God's, and we're just offering back to Him what is actually His. So here are some common questions about giving and tithing. These might actually be in there. People say, well, my finances are out of order. What do I do? Number one, you repent. Okay, you change what got you in that circumstance. If it's like I live on credit cards, stop living on credit cards. Just stop it. Cut them up. Stop using them anymore. You seek wisdom and how to go ahead and change that situation. And if you need more help at Element, we can actually refer you to CPAs. Who could help you? Most of the CPAs refer you to, one of the first things they will do is say, have you gone through Dave Ramsey's course? Because it's a very practical course to go through. There's different ones that do it. Crown has one called Common Sense, but we looked at all of them before we decided to start pushing one. And the reason we pushed Dave Ramsey's course is it's very, very practical. Very practical. It's like the first day you take that class, it's like, what do I do? Day one, boom, this is what you do. And how you start getting out of debt and how you start working forward. The course, again, the fee that comes in for it doesn't actually go to us. It actually goes to the course materials they send out and all that. The course for the Dave Ramsey class is right now, I think it's $100, which prompted one of the guys who was leading it when we first started, he goes, I got to be rich to get out of debt, apparently. but again, I mean, if you're going to take the course over, you know, the course of a few weeks, you say that if $100, if you want to take it, but $100 is too much up front, you know, we could break it out to, you know, $25 a month, and we'll upfront the cost for you and help you to get through it. But it's really important to get on track, and this is one of the reasons why we do host that. Second thing, what do I do if I cannot afford to give? Well, you should seek what you can do and grow in financial wisdom. I'd also say that sometimes their financial condition becomes very, very strained. They have an unusual need. Maybe there's an injury. You have somebody in your family who's hurt really bad. Maybe you're a single parent. And sometimes at that point, the church then needs to step in and assist you. So it's not always going this way. Sometimes it goes back the other way as well, okay? And that's why we, again, have these funds that we set aside money for at Element. Number three, should non-Christians give or tithe? Quite honestly, we don't expect anybody who's not a believer to ever give. We don't. They can if they want to, but they're not expected in any way. Number four, should I give off my gross or my net income? I know people ask this question all the time. Really, I'll tell you what it comes down to. Pray about it and talk to God. Proverbs 3:9 says, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Well, it kind of seems self-explanatory to me, but just pray about it and see what God tells you. Fifth question people ask is, can I get a deduction for giving or tithing? Yes. Yes. Most importantly, you should be doing this, all right? Because it's not the government's money they're giving you, all right? It's your money they're giving back to you, all right? So the government goes, oh, well, you know, the government pays me. No, the government doesn't pay somebody. We pay somebody, all right? So the government, when you ever get money back, it's your money coming back. The government doesn't have any money except what they take from you. So get as much back as you can. So you give it away. You can record a check online. If you give cash, put it in an envelope with your name on it. This isn't anything about, oh, look how great I am, I'm giving. It's being proper stewards of what God is giving. Write it off your taxes while you can, because one day I bet you won't be able to. So write it up now while you can. Our bookkeeper keeps accurate totals. No one sees that. I don't see that. People on the board don't see it. The bookkeeper sees that. Twice a year they will send you a statement that tells you how much you have given. At the end of the year, you get this, and you take it and you write that off your taxes at the end of the year. It's a great thing. I love it. And it kind of helps me to see how I'm doing that year, too, when I get it at the end. How can I give to Element? Element, you can offering box on the side wall. You can give online. I give online because I don't write checks anymore. I try not to carry cash on me. If I carry cash on me, I spend it. It's terrible. I'll, like, walk down the road and be like, oh, what's that? Someone's selling bouncy balls with smiley faces. I could use one of those. And I just buy garbage all the time. So I try not to carry cash ever. And so I do everything online. So I give online. And then people say, well, how much should I give? That's between you and God, all right? That is not something I will even tell you. We at Element, you know, we do expect members to give, but we don't ask for pledges. We don't ask for your yearly income. We don't ask for anything like that. We just believe it should be generous, sacrificial, faithful, and joyful, okay? Consistent in giving. As a matter of fact, the only time that we ever look at what people give is when we look at people for elders. I don't know how much it is. I ask, you know, is it consistent? Is it joyful? Is it? And that's all I ask. And then I go and then I have like a conversation. Like before Jonathan became our newest elder, we asked that question. Bookkeeper let me know. We sat down. We talked to him, and he was faithful and sacrificial and joyful and all of it. And so that's one of the things that we look at in that because we believe that our eldership should be the model for what everybody else is doing as well. And I'll break this down for you. This is what I talked about a couple weeks ago. According to Scripture, there is one God, and it's not us. And God is holy. God is different. He is something else. And he created all things for his glory with an innate sense of possibility and beauty. And so all of creation, including us, are supposed to reflect God's glory. And so we have a responsibility to reflect him in our lives. And so, like I said a couple weeks ago, the biggest problem in our world is not Muslims or terrorism. Is that we love ourselves more than we love our God, and that is idolatry. And we give to ourselves more than we give to our God, and that is false worship. And we buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't even like. And that's just stupid. That's just stupid. Because we all worship something. Even atheists are going to end up worshiping something, even if it's themselves. And so the issue is our object of worship. You know, where does your time and your money and your talent actually go? Because again, we will all do without something. We'll all sacrifice something in order to get something we really, really want. We must understand that everything belongs to God. And we belong to God, and everything is all his. And I know it didn't really go along with the notes at all. That's why I just kind of talked through this one rather than having you flip through the book, because the book's got a bunch of different information in there. Questions? Yes.
Do you type for to convert people in Israel to Christianity?
Do we give to Oregon? Well, we typically try to support. Some years we give away 10%, some years we don't, but it all stays in a fund. So it doesn't go away. It always sits there, so we don't spend it all one year. We still have it. We typically try to support people who do church planting, because church planting, statistically speaking, is the way that most people come to know who Jesus Christ is. And so that's why the line item is called church planting and world relief, because every once in a while there's something that comes up. And we will help that thing out. Like in town, we help out the food bank and the Better Women's Shelter and the Good Sam. We help out the Salvation Army. You know, we help out a bunch of things in town. But the major focus where we try to give money to is church planters. And we don't know anybody in Israel that's church planting. And if we did, if they came and talked to us and let us know and what they're doing, then we would probably be very open to supporting them.
I attend this. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's this Deep Water All-Dominational Bible Study, and he encourages us to do that. And he does have an access to some internet where we could, if you wish to, give.
Oh, you can have him always call us.
Yeah.
You can have him always call us, and then we can talk about it. Because, again, you know, we have had people who have talked to us about church planting, and their vision was different than ours of what church planting should look like. And we've said no. There's other people, like there's a guy right now who I'm very close to presenting to our board right now, and he is planting churches in Ireland. And his vision and how he's doing it aligns very closely to who we are. And we want to make sure people have the ability to do that. We support, up until about a year and a half ago, we supported a guy who was in Jordan in the Middle East. Doing that, and he's since now back in the States. We support another guy right now who's in Indonesia. And planting churches there is very different than you think here. It's going in and trying to get the main spiritual leader of, you know, whatever area you're in. And literally, if you just walk out and start proselytizing in Indonesia, you're on a plane, you're going home, or you're dead, one or the other. And so they're very careful. They're in a village right now where the main elder in the village is now talking to them about Jesus. You know, very...
Actually, in this group that I go to, there is a gentleman that goes to Salvador, Ecuador, and he helps build some of these churches.
Again,
I know exactly
when,
what you mean. And,
yeah.
And even another piece is that, you know, some of these people they're involved with can't even email or even call
right.
them because of the fact that their life can be, you know, it's a threat.
Right.
They know that they
yeah, whenever they write to us, you know, they can't use the word missionary. They put the letter M. You know, they can't say prayer. And they got, you know, so there's very careful words that they got to say. Again, when we try and support church planters, you know, it's like we want the guy on the ground, boots on the ground. That's who we want to be supporting. Because those are the guys who really need the support. So anyway, that's... Okay. Anything? Yes?
You know, when you talked about one out of every six adults, 17% mm-hmm. were giving, is that in the American church or is that...
That's the last study I saw. That might have been 2 or 3 years ago now. But that was a Barna study that was done of churches in the U.S.
Okay.
Churches in the U.S.
Thank you.
I should check if they updated that recently. You can go to their website. They have all kinds of studies. Anybody else? Yes. What are you going to say? I'm always worried. What's going to happen?
I want to disappoint you.
So the reprobate in giving. No, no.
How would you define sacrificial?
I think sacrificial, I don't think sacrificial is my kids are going to starve or I give Jesus $5. You feed your kids, okay? I mean, your first, you know, priority in that you are taking care of these children. I believe that, you know, dads in their homes are first pastors to their families. You know, I am secondary to that. You know, fathers in their homes, always the first pastor to families. And so, you know, sacrificial, though, is am I going to go to, I don't know, 5 movies this month? Am I going to go to one? You know, what's you know, it, for an American culture, it's so it's for sacrificial is a weird word for us,
yeah.
because we've been sold a bill of goods that we're not supposed to enjoy physical things in our life, and yet God created physical things to be enjoyed, and so there's a fine line in that where you know God doesn't necessarily want everybody living in a box on the side of the road. You will do much more ministry and much more good and much more helping people by inviting them into your home and feeding them a meal rather than living on the side of the road. It's like sometimes when I talk to kids and they're like, I'm going to go be a missionary in this country. And I've known kids who have dropped out of med school to go and do that. And I'm thinking, why in the world would you do that? Oh, because my heart really went, oh, great, finish med school and then go do it. How many more people are you going to help being a doctor rather than the guy who dropped out of med school and went over there? And it's, you know, and that's kind of the thing we and I, this not sound like the way this is going to sound, but sometimes we over-spiritualize things. And we need to understand that physical and spiritual go together. It's a single unified being. I mean, again, the Hebrews didn't really have a word for spiritual because it wasn't a separated life. It was one life. And so it was all supposed to come together. So I think sacrificial in those terms means that, you know, you do give up something so that this thing can happen over here. So, but again, I think it's between people and God and what that is. You know, would I like to have the extra money I give him? Well, of course I would, but it's not mine, you know. I mean, seriously, the whole Dave Ramsey thing, my wife and I, a few years ago, because my wife's awesome, she's like, let's go buy a boat. And I'm like, dear Jesus, she's amazing, right? And so we went, and she, like, I was going to buy, like, this used boat and stuff. She's like, I like that one right there, and I'm all, what happened to you this week? And so we walked in and we bought this really nice boat, and now I got this boat payment. And so we have been really trying to save everything we can to get out of debt to pay off this boat. And so we've been trying to save. And then she's making jam a couple weeks ago when the sink breaks, and we've been thinking about redoing our countertops because they're just trash. Because we bought a foreclosure, and so the countertops are trash. Everything in the house was trash. And so she broke the sink. I'm like, well, let's just do the countertops. We're going to have to replace the sink anyway. So we did the countertops, and so that goes into my boat-saving money. And, you know, it's, again, what's the priority? What's important? The important should be paying off that stupid boat, but everything else comes up. And so I need to, you know, I need to, and for me, you know, I give, but I also need to sacrifice in other ways because it's not good for me to be in debt either. So I need to get out of that as quickly as possible. Just better stewardship to not be paying interest on things that I should just own. Dave Ramsey, 101, right there. Emergency fund. No credit card. Although I do actually own a credit card. I actually own a couple. My wife and I put everything that we buy on a credit card. Not, and Dave Ramsey will say not to do that, but we pay it off every month. And we do it because we get like between 1% and 5% back, depending on what we do, in cash. So if I want to go buy something, it's like I actually figure out, is it going to be cheaper if I use a credit card for that? Because it will cost me, you know, 5% less if I buy it with this credit card. And so sometimes I think that's a better deal. I'll just do that. And then we pay it off at the end of every month. So we don't keep balances on our cards. But we do, because we do have one, because in the end it actually helps us to get money back. Which is great, because this year we're going on vacation at the end of the year to go snowboarding, and I think I'm going to have enough money that it's going to pay for everything. So, awesome! Seriously, if you're ever going on a trip and you need someone to pay for your plane tickets on a credit card, ask me. I will buy them for you. You just pay me for them, but I will put them on my credit card for you any day. Because I get money. I get money. Any other questions? No? Sweet. 45 minutes. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for being a God who could, quite frankly, just do it all yourself. And yet you allow us as people to steward things in your stead. And we thank you for that. And we ask that we would be good stewards, that we would honor you in all that we do, more properly reflecting who you are in our lives by the way that we give and the way that we serve. Again, we cannot thank you enough. And sometimes I know we get into all kinds of trouble because we think it's all ours. But I ask that your spirit would constantly remind us that it's not ours. And quite frankly, that we are yours in the whole scheme of things. And so help us to live being people who properly reflect all that you've given us. Amen.